Hello, and welcome to another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org. And with me, I have Steve Montgomery, author of The Converging Apostasy and A Quick Outline of Hands-on Eschatology, A Matter of Timing and Agency. And together, we're examining the themes of apostasy in the New Apostolic Reformation and its history. Steve, we've been diving so deeply into Jane Lead and merging that with Christian identity to lay the framework for where this podcast is heading with the converging apostasy and understanding that mysticism flowed all through it was a little shocking to many of our listeners. I don't know if you got a chance to see the comments in the on the YouTube site, but there's so much mysticism that flowed through it, and key figures of the Latter Rain movement and Christian identity both were simultaneously influenced by what appears to be the works of Jane Lead in some branches and sects of white supremacy and Christian identity, and definitely in the Latter Rain. We have clear evidence that Jane Lead was one of the primary influences through people like Charles Price, who had her writings. But today, we're now bringing everything that we've talked about in the past, what is it, four episodes now, bringing it together and laying the framework of how this sort of exploded into, the Latter Rain movement and beyond. And hopefully the listeners can understand that we're showing the trails that lead directly to what today we call the NAR.
Absolutely, John. The NAR is sort of the target or the arrival point from which all the other streams have been flowing towards. And so two really key figures that have come to my mind as we've been doing this this series of podcasts are Bill Britton and Sam Fife. And I have mentioned Bill Britton before. I don't think Sam Fife as much. But just to start off, a little bit of background on Bill Britton was when I was helping to do exit counseling for people who had been in religious cults that were related to the Latter Rain or the Manifest Sons of God teachings. Bill Britton's name came up repeatedly as sort of a founding father, a mover and a shaker, if you will, to those sorts of doctrines. And actually, his influence can be felt even in some folks that are Christian identity / Manifest Sons of God, like, say, somebody like David Ebal. So, but yeah, it's a little background to Bill Britton. He was a one-time associate of Sam Fife, and they became estranged to one another, and there was a breaking away. Bill Britton, for all the oddities he had in his teachings, was a little bit more feet on the grounds kind of guy. He was, I would say, a little bit more socially minded than Sam Fife. Sam Fife, of course, took his followers and formed small communes and farms. And unfortunately, Fife was one of those ones who had many, I think, pretty clear references and proof that he had physically and sexually abused people in his cult, including child abuse. And that was primarily through his elders, but I think he was involved too. And his cult was known as the Body of Christ and the Move. And so just like you were saying, John, you know, of course, the followers of William Branham's The Message, the Move was this other trend that was happening. Another bizarre thing about Bill Britton was that he supposedly led the Guatemalan dictator, military dictator, Rios Montt, to Christ. He witnessed to him and brought him to Christ. Unfortunately, Rios Montt, shortly thereafter, was accused of war crimes against humanity in his military endeavors in Guatemala and elsewhere. Another important fact about Britton was that he made the writings of George Warnock available as I think I might have heard this from you before, John, is that John Robert Stevens of The Walk, another Manifest Sons of God-oriented teacher, was highly influenced by the Feast of Tabernacles. And so George Warnock was also present in North Battleford when the Lateran got started. Okay, so why is that important? Is that the Feast of Tabernacles was probably one of the first and most influential doctrinal presentations of Lateran influence Manifest Sons of God teachings. So what I think of as the Big Four are those who are very, very directly and clearly related to Jane Leed's influence. And they were all prophets in the Lateran movement, but it's clear that not all prophets in the Lateran movement, I say prophets with quotation marks, not all of them taught the Manifest Sons of God teachings. So just a quick review for your listeners. Manifest Sons of God, well, it's clearly in the Bible in Romans 8. But the thing that makes it a problem is that the advocates of this this sort of belief system that we're analyzing say that the sons of God will become manifest, essentially divine, with the ability to righteously judge those who they disagree with or lesser Christians and take dominion of the earth. They say all of this will occur prior to the return of Jesus Christ. So you can see this is a little bit problematic. So the Big Four would include Bill Britton, George Houghton, Roy Cronquist, and J. Preston Eby. Okay, how do I know this? Well, it's apparent in Bill Britton's writings. If you know anything about Jane Leed's teachings and what I call hands-on eschatology, it's fairly clearly outlined in Bill Britton's writings. It was also verified by the research of Dr. Bridget Jacobs, who's a scholar who's, she's ex-NAR. As we mentioned, NAR is a very important factor of all this stuff we're talking about. It was also verified through the research of Bill Mackenstad, who analyzed tons and tons of writings, as you have and I have both done. But just to confirm things further, on August 9th, 2020, I gave a call to Bill Britton's daughter, who's her name is Becky Britton hyphen Volts. And she said, sure enough, she looked in her computer. She said, yeah, it's right here. And so anyway, that Lateran, or excuse me, that Jane Leed connection is very clear through Bill Britton. The Lateran connection, which is taking us one step closer to the NAR, that can be shown in a couple of ways. One is a writing of an associate that I have. Her name is Georgie Kenyon Shendre. She's written the Emerging World Church with the help of Dr. Bob K. Wright. And according to what she has discovered, she says that Bill Britton became associated with the so-called spiritual outpouring of 1948. And as a lot of people were, due to the doctrines and practices, which were fairly extreme, he was then excommunicated from the Assemblies of God. He is warned in his writings that he's not the only one who's made these outlandish warnings, but he said he warns that anybody who speaks against the Lateran will be, quote, judged by God. And if you look at his writings, judged by God is pretty heavy, tall order there that can be pretty dangerous. So what about Bill Britton's connections to other prophets? There's a personal letter that I had found through an associate that says that Don Tobias, he was critiquing some of Bill Britton's writings, and not in a very positive way, but trying to be fair-handed about it, looking at them from scriptural angles. And Britton's response was that he was saying to Mr. Tobias that, well, you know, I do all my ministry and my connection with other solid men of God. And I have fellowship with them. Well, who did he list? He lists Bob Wiener, who, depending on the way you look at things, you might just say, well, he was a little bit extreme. But a lot of people identified him as another Latter Rain inspired cult leader of a campus group called Maranatha Ministries. Another thing that another couple of folks at Bill Britton said he was associated with, solid men of God, Charles Schmidt and Larry Tomczak. Those were two of the leaders of the cult-like shepherding discipleship movement, aka the Fort Lauderdale Five. And yes, there's been people who've literally been, if you want to call it brainwashed, whatever, associated with those groups, very, very authoritarian and sort of in your face and controlling whatever you do. Finally, one of the other significant people that Britton says he's associated with is John Jimenez. Well, that becomes interesting, and it's sort of a side angle to all this stuff, taking you into more of the esoteric world and the so-called New Age teachings. Why John Jimenez is significant with Britton is that John Jimenez, Bill Britton, and George Warnock, formerly mentioned, were all commended by Ernest Ramsey. Ernest Ramsey was a Alice Beatty follower, and Ramsey wrote The Neo-Pentecostals and Their Amazing New Age Teachings. There, Ramsey is clearly connecting Britton and Warnock to Kabbalistic writings and ways of finding secrets in the Old Testament. And the way Britton would say it is line upon line, precept upon precept, and that this is symbolic types and shadows to discover gnosis or secret knowledge from the Old Testament.
For our listeners who recognize many of these names that Steve has mentioned, you'll immediately make the connections into what later became the New Apostolic Reformation, and you can see the direct levels of influence and where it came from. To those who haven't, Charles and I addressed this somewhat in our historical revival history series in the podcast, and we created this roadmap, basically, of influence, and you can find it on william-branham.org/Latter Rain. You can see the map, and I'll try to throw it up here on the screen for the YouTube feed. But there is a clear level of influence heading both directions. And what gets really interesting is that there's a point in time in which it is clearly a politicized movement. And when you think about what the NAR is currently doing and all of the political implications of what they're doing, that gets really key to understand. You mentioned Guatemala, for instance, and it sounds like this wonderful side story, but as we've explored on the William Branham research side, there were cult communes being set up in South America that were directly connected to the William Branham and the Latter Rain movement that were not good revival places. They were torturing prisoners, killing people, molesting children, producing weapons of mass destruction, arms deals, the whole bit, and helping Nazis escape into South America. And there was a United States government connection to it. So whenever you mention, you know, the leader of Guatemala being converted to the faith, well, the Latter Rain movement, through the help of Nixon and some of that history, were helping to install Pinochet, which is Chile's, you know, the worst dictator they've ever had. So there's this clear political influence. And where that gets really interesting is when you consider the framework that allowed all of that. All of the men that we're talking about were wholly invested in the manifested Sons of God doctrine. And people who politicized it in the United States, such as Wesley Swift. Swift was the second in command of the California Ku Klux Klan, spreading white supremacy, Christian identity, and he was deeply connected to the early formations of the Christian nationalist movement. So this was a very politicized movement. And all of these guys are deeply connected to Latter Rain. The Sam Fife and the Walk, for instance, even on the Wikipedia page, you can find some of that information, but he was fully invested in the Manifested Sons of God theology because it was a framework that, quite frankly, was established to create a level of control that could enable a central figure. And in doing so, these guys could create influence over the masses. And during, I can't remember what episode it is, but Charles and I went into some of that as it was related to politics. And Richard Nixon was actually working with the Full Gospel Businessmen and gave this speech at the National Prayer Breakfast, which is also tied to this thing, wherein he was instructing the evangelical world to use their political influence to imprint on the minds a very politicized charge against communism. Whether you like communism or not, that's separate from this issue, but you can see this merging of religion and politics, and many of these men took it to heart. Where it gets really interesting is whenever you look at Sam Fife and the Move. In the fall of 1971, Sam Fife believed that the tribulation and second coming of Christ was near. And William Branham in the Latter Rain movement was saying that in 1977, he could see nothing beyond that. And so the world would end before 1977, which obviously failed. But Sam Fife, who was influenced in this doctrine, began moving people were leaving their homes, their jobs, their family, security, and moving to locations in Canada, Colombia, and Alaska, basically out of the United States, because the end-of-day scenario painted by Latter Rain through William Branham was that the United States was going to be the target of communism's wrath. And that charge came directly from Nixon's influence on Branham to take this, you know, this charge against communism and instill such a fear in the people's minds. Well, what that developed into is the fear itself becomes a mental prison for these people. They're trapped in these cults because of the fear, and that enabled Sam Fife, the Move, and numerous other groups that we've explored.
Yeah, John, that's fascinating. It tells me I need to visit your website again because I know you're constantly adding things. I was not aware about the Nixon connection. Somehow, based on other things that happened through Nixon, it doesn't sound entirely unusual. But the part about the NAR, you know, we're always tying this back to where it's come to today. I actually saw on, I guess, what you'd call just a secular news outlet. One of the reporters has finally, you know, when I watch the news and they're talking about stuff, then I say, oh, they're barely getting to the tip of the iceberg related to Dominion and so forth. Somebody recently, I think it was the journalist Laura Coates in her program, was very specifically outlining and critiquing the seven mountains of C. Peter Wagner. So, you know, finally it's coming around. And to me, I told my wife, I said, hey, they should be interviewing me or John, because we're going to add so much more than this particular Mrs. Coates knew about it. And I don't know who informed her, but I was just glad to see that it was being talked about, at least to a certain extent. But yeah, John, also the thing about Sam Fife, just an interesting thing that came about for when I was talking to Bill Britton's daughter, Becky. I wanted to know how they broke away. In other words, how did Sam Fife and Bill Britton decide that they weren't going to be fellowshipping much more, working together? Well, Sam Fife, in several of his writings, mentions Bill Britton at conferences, and it's always vague. They don't know. He doesn't say where the conference was, who else spoke, what year it was, anything like that. But the Bill Britton plug is there. You also hear certain doctrinal things and certain loaded language that comes from Britton, and it goes in the Sam Fife smell. But I asked Becky, I said, well, what was it that caused your dad to not really fellowship with Fife anymore, work together. And I said, specifically, is it for doctrinal reasons? Because they both, you know, have pretty outlandish ideas. She said, no, it wasn't for doctrinal reasons. She says, it was pretty much what you were talking about, John, that Fife separated his flock into small communal farms and spread them about and were waiting to become manifest sons of God and waiting for the kingdom to come. And the other reason that Becky said that her dad, Bill, disfellowshipped from Fife is the, excuse me, the extreme amount of control that Fife had over his elders and the members of the flock. So Britton was more like, he actually has a pamphlet, which very humbly describes himself as prophet on wheels. So he was more, friendly in that sense of wanting to spread, to me, garbage, to spread the garbage to other Christians and travel about giving seminars and so on and making prophecies. But besides the personal interviews that I did of people associated with Fife or Bill Britton, and besides the scholarly research that has addressed some of these, there really needs to be much more investigation, but there is some out there. What do I base my knowledge of Bill Britton's ideas on? Well, over the years, either through the old days when we had cassette tapes and then pamphlets and tracts, whatnot, I looked at 14 primary sources from Bill Britton. So for your listeners, I'll just go ahead and mention them because if they ever run into this stuff, they'll know, okay, this is one of the predecessors of the NAR, and the NAR really doesn't teach much different from what Bill Britton does. It's just worded slightly differently, but the basis and the bottom line is the same. Okay, so here's a list I have here. Hebrews, the book of better things. Now, that's a side topic, John, but for all of the manifest sons of God teachers that I've ever looked into, they really, really love the book of Hebrews because it talks about the great cloud of witnesses, which you and I have discussed before. For them, this is essentially talking about you are not alone. There's this great cloud of witnesses, and you can tap into some kind of communication with them. And oddly enough, people like Roel Cronquist, who I think you might have mentioned before, and I've mentioned, Roel Cronquist was one of those influenced by Jane Lee. He very, very clearly says that the cloud of witnesses will become incarnate in the body of Christ on earth, therefore making them the essentially immortal, divine, manifest sons of God. Okay, so the next book is A Closer Look at the Rapture. All of the and this is apart from any kind of disputes on whether there's, you know, how somebody stands on the rapture or not, but all of the manifest sons of God teachings and all of the stuff you see from the NAR, they want to get away from the rapture. Why? Because the rapture is like, hey, you're out of here. Everything's A-okay. You don't have to worry about anything anymore. They do want to worry about stuff because they would prefer to, quote, take the kingdom as elite believers. Another one is called Peter's Shadow. And in that one, Britton has some odd things to say about, sounds very mystical, Reach for the Stars, The Beautiful Veil, Heaven on Earth. That sounds like the kingdom of God. This next one has a funny title to me, John, because it reminds me of something Karl Marx wrote. Listen to the title, see what you think. Sons of God, Awake. Okay, yeah, wow. That might have been written in a very famous Marxist book. The Harness of the Lord, Treasures of the Snow. When I first got that book, I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be about the beauty of God's creation. No, it actually has some real tricky footwork that Bill Britton did to get back to that idea of carrying out the judgment day through the manifest sons of God. Ruth, the Great Harvest. What is it? That almost reminded me of a skit from Saturday Night Live. What's up with that? So he says, what is it? Yeah, I'm thinking, yeah, what is your teaching? Tell me more plainly. then the one that really specifically talks about Jane Lead and her 60 propositions is called A Prophecy Out of the Past. That was a tract that written circulated. And yeah, the thing of its source, how it got into the hands of the Lattering folks is accurate. Jesus the Pattern Son, one of his more famous works, because it very clearly outlines the idea, which you can get in Mormon teachings and elsewhere, that Jesus was just a man with a lot of power and following God so perfectly that he earned his sonship, so to speak. And I know Branham talked about sonship also. So that's an important one. Here's one that if you think it tastes like, smells like, and feels like, you're correct. Jesus was not a Jew. Is there something behind that teaching? Yeah, as a matter of fact, there is. And we talked about that briefly a couple of sessions ago. Now, this next one really does raise eyebrows, and for good reason. It's called Lucifer, the Shining One. Without explaining everything in a little booklet, it's pretty much saying Satan and Lucifer are two separate beings, and one of the two is a tool in the hands of God to perfect the saints.
You mentioned getting away from the rapture, and people have asked me that question. Whenever you're in this cultish mindset, you have this very black or white view, and so when you see another group that has descended from your group, and they have some variation on what you believe, you think, well, they're not part of us. They just went astray. Not recognizing that what happens is this theology evolves and changes over time, sometimes to the polar opposite of what it was before. So when you look at any of the grandchildren of Latter Rain, for instance, they're not going to look even similar than their great-grandchildren and so on and so forth. And The notion of get away from the rapture, people have asked me, why did they change that? Because that's fundamental to Branham's teaching, and it flowed through Latter Rain. But I've come to the conclusion that William Branham's rapture theology was based off of so many extra-biblical facts that many of these men just cannot openly say. Now people understand the Bible, and you have the new translations, the SV, that they're reading. So they recognize that the extra-biblical things that Branham and anti-biblical things that Branham said in Latter Rain couldn't fly today. But also, Branham's rapture was supposed to happen before 1977. So if they continue that rapture framework that was laid out, well, they've got this clear problem, because we're way past 1977. And yet they still use things like the great cloud of witnesses, and spiritualism flows through it. One of the things that they did in Latter Rain is they would have these prophetic insights or visions where they say that they peered on the other side and they spoke with the souls of the dead. And it's a divine healing cult, and not everybody gets healed. So they have to have an answer for this. And one of the answers is, well, and this came directly from William Branham. He said, well, I peered to the other side and I spoke with this dead person, and they're happier there now. So it's okay if they died, and my faith did not heal them, or whatever was the gimmick. And it's spiritualism. It's a very, very anti-biblical notion. But they want to communicate with the dead, which is, in the Old Testament, they would stone you for communicating with the dead. And they also want to tap into fortune telling like a Christian crystal ball. And the way that this was enacted in the Latter Rain movement is they would set up these private interviews, and they could go to whoever is the man who has the Christian crystal ball, and they could come with some problem that's in the future, and this man would go, oh, I see God is showing me through my crystal ball of my mind that if you do such and such, you'll have the outcome that is best for you. They actually would not give what would happen. They would say that if you choose this, you'll choose the right path, basically, which is very vague. And where that gets really interesting is that these types of interviews happened with members of the Jonestown cult when they were in Indianapolis. And these are the people that went to Jonestown and drank the cyanide-laced Kool-Aid. So all of this comes back together, and the framework that was laid out with Latter Rain, even though the theology has evolved over time and is in many cases not even similar and polar opposite, it is an evolving, ever-changing, ever-growing theology based off of this core.
Yeah, John, that's really significant stuff you're talking about there. And you're kind of leaning into the, well, with the crystal ball and making predictions and visiting with spirits, supposedly, to get higher knowledge. That leads very well into the next segment that I was going to throw out there. And that is the question that happened after reading those 14 books and interviewing folks related to Bill Britton's ministry comes to my mind: where did Britton get all this stuff? Okay. Well, the idea of having influences that are heading a certain direction, and as they progress and develop, as you say, where are they going to get other information? So many times it is not that they dreamed it up, they weren't like theologians that thought in a systematic way. What they did mostly was borrow, steal, plagiarize. And that's where the extra biblical sources come from. Well, where can we find a lot of extra biblical sources? How about the esoteric world, which will offer you all kinds of wonderful new ideas? Well, speaking of where did Britton get this stuff, I found out that a lot of his ideas come from Kabbalah, which is the, you mentioned mysticism. There you have Jewish mysticism. But then later in the Renaissance period, they actually have several important figures that taught what is known as Christian Kabbalah. And it just so happens that because Jane Lead was so influenced by so many of these esoteric systems of doctrine, Kabbalah happened to be one of them. Okay, so did she pass that on to Latter Rain prophets? The answer is yes. Here's an example. Having been influenced by Kabbalah, Jane Lead speaking of, Britton and his Jane Lead inspired fellow prophets also had a certain teaching called, and I've never heard this pronounced, maybe you have, John, but it's Gematria or Gematria. And this is who happened to teach this? Well, Bill Britton has it in some of his writings, and he even mentions it. Roy Cronquist mentions it. Franklin Hall, what an influential fellow he was on the Latter Rain, he mentions it, and so does David Ebal. And David Ebal has that interesting connection between Latter Rain Manifest Sons of God teachings and Christian identity teachings. So what is Kabbalah, what is Gematria? One, it's the, quote, converting of names and words to their numerical value. And this is known as Gematria. I'm quoting Bill Britton here, not an esotericist. Books have been written on the subject, but it is not my intention to go into great detail on it now. No kidding, Bill. This is not a Christian source of information. and essentially, it's a biblical version of numerology. And you mentioned things that people got stoned from in the Old Testament. I believe numerology would fit into some of those categories of teachings in the Old Testament. Here's another one that comes from Kabbalah. There are seven realms in the spirit. Okay, David Ebal copied that from Britton also. This is like the Valentinus-influenced Kabbalistic ideas that the Satanist Helena Blavatsky and the Luciferian Alice Bailey referred to as the seven rays or angelic emanations of pluralistic deity. I say that slowly, one, so I can pronounce those words. Two, because it's a pretty big mouthful. But what it's telling you is that Britton and those around him in the Latter Rain movement, they were into this kind of stuff from Jane Lead. they're pretty much quoting things that come from Kabbalah, from Helena Blavatsky, and Alice Bailey, definitely not Christian leaders. And it's the basis, this Kabbalah, gematria is actually the basis of a lot of the teachings on the role of the great cloud of witnesses, because in Manifest Sons of God teachings, quite a few of them, they say it will be through channels of access into the material world that these spirits of, quote, just men in heaven are to be made manifest on earth. So that's another kind of connection with Kabbalah with Britain. A third one is that previously mentioned writing of his called Lucifer, the Shining One. In that writing, Britain sounds very much like the Kabbalistic teaching called Adam Kadmon. This is God's one corporate man who is Christ. Okay, Kabbalah states it a little bit differently. But in this writing, Britain says, after the shock value of this message wears off, well, maybe never, this very timely message will open up the book in a new way concerning end times truths and the new creation man.
It's so fascinating that these men took such extra-biblical sources and wowed the crowds with it. I did a deep study when I first came out of this thing, because a lot of what you're describing was programmed in my head. And when I began to read the Bible over and over for myself and tried to wash out all of the programming that and indoctrination that they gave me, I began to realize that it was a very non-Christian religion I was in, but they called the God the name Jesus. And so when they would say the name Jesus, I thought it was the Christian God they were talking about. I came to realize over time that that's just a name that they gave whatever it is that they're worshiping, and it has no relevance to the Bible whatsoever. But they were taking these ideas from Kabbalistic notions. And you mentioned the numbers in the name, for example. That was a big thing when I was growing up. In fact, they, in the latter rain, it was dumbed down even further. Branham would use words such as he saw five angels and five spelled out the letters G-R-A-C-E, for example, and the five had a significant meaning. Or he would claim that his name had seven letters, William and Branham both had seven letters, and he changed his middle name from, the government records show his name is Marvin, but he changed it to Marion and misspelled Marion with two R's so that it would also have seven. And then began, he was trying to denounce Billy Graham, and in the latter rain version of numerologies, the seven is spiritually significant and the six is of lesser importance. So G-R-A-H-A-M had six. And so he set up the foundation for that. Apparently, back in the time in which that weird thing was introduced, people fell for it because they weren't as biblically educated, I guess is the best way to say it. And so they could be duped easily by simple mathematics. And simple mathematics was used all throughout, man. But in today's day and age, that doesn't fly. You cannot dupe people with simple mathematics in today's world. And so these men have made new variations on the same type of scam or con that they're creating, but they'll use such a complicated version of it that now the people who are biblically educated, they're trying to wrap their heads around the new mathematics, and you end up with basically this religion of mathematics. It's still not Christianity. But I grew up with all of that programmed in my head, and I did this deep dive on church history whenever I left, because I was just curious, where did this religion come from, and if this wasn't Christianity, what was it? And I went all the way back to Irenaeus, which is one of the first Christian apologist, right? And it was a very hard reading his Against Heresies, because you can't just read the text and understand it. You have to read the text and then read the history about the subject matter that he's talking about. Who are these people? What are they believing? What is the, you know, the different gods and demigods of the ancient world? So that led me into studies of mythologies, and still today I'm fascinated with all of that. But in the end, where I ended up is this. The very first Christian apologist denounced this usage of this numerology, and he said that these men with evil notions and evil minds, and I'm paraphrasing, he said they're doing exactly what they're doing in the pagan religions. And when you think about what we've described in the last few episodes of this, we're talking about the converging apostasy. We're talking about the same exact thing happening today that happened way back during Irenaeus' time, and he's condemning it as heresy back then. But that's where the Christianity of today has drawn the line. You do have people who are educated in the Bible, and they have Bible studies, Bible classes, but you have very few people who are studied on the, or learned on the Bible history, and people like Irenaeus, what were they condemning? Some of the churches now introduce this, but a vast majority don't. And I can assure you in the NAR, they're not going to talk about this guy from the ancient world condemned everything that I'm preaching today.
Yeah, John, one of my real heroes of the faith, you mentioned Irenaeus. Another thing about him that I found out, besides being a hero of the faith, dealing with stuff that you and I are dealing with, he specifically wrote tons and tons of critiques of Valentinus's writings. And so, as I've mentioned in previous podcasts with you, Valentinus is not the only Gnostic, but the esoteric world of today, and if you go back to the 1800s with Blavatsky and then on to Alice Bailey, he's the most influential, and those folks cherry pick from him and come down to a few essential doctrines that you can also find in Kabbalah. And so the thing about Valentinus and you know the fact that Irenaeus is having to deal with him is that Valentinus got a lot of his stuff from Plato. So Plato is the pre-Christian philosopher from Greece. And the esoteric world really loves him. He's a hero of the faith, their faith. And you probably know this already, but Plato is a big hero for Wesley Swift. And so, you know, without going into a deep dive into Plato right now, the idea of perfectibility, communication with angels, things that were picked up through Valentinus later, they also have showed up in George Houghton's writings, because George Houghton not only liked Jane Lead, he liked her predecessor, who was Jacob Boehm, or Boehm, can't ever pronounce that properly. So anyway, back to Plato. Jane Lee does show the influence of Plato, mostly through Neoplatonism. And the Jane Lee-inspired Britain mentions the Plato-like false doctrine about conscious pre-existence of the sons of God in the angelic realm. Well, you can kind of think, well, so what? That's pretty weird stuff. But the esoteric world in the latter reign folks that were influenced by the esoteric world take pre-existence as the idea that they were once divine, essentially angels. They became incarnate on the earth, and they're working their way back to the garden, as New Age folks might say, or as hippies might have said, working their way back to the garden. And that is that they will become deified, manifest sons of God again. And so, but later Britain says in the same writing where he's talking about this is a false doctrine, sounds like he wants to have his cake and eat it too, because he says only that which was eternally pre-existent in God, such as the sons of God, can return back to God as glorified sons of God. So yeah, he's like talking out of one side of his mouth, backtracking and saying, yeah, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod, we really do believe that stuff. Okay, and now here's one that's really, really significant in the esoteric world. Even if somebody says they've never heard of Valentinus, never heard of Blavatsky, You'll have people that do say they've heard of this one. This is a Plato-inspired axiom that says, as above, so also below. That one is like, it's all over the place in esoteric teachings. Well, Bill Britton said, and listen to this carefully, he says, as in the natural, so also in the spiritual. Sounds like he's paraphrasing this other clearly Plato-inspired idea. And this is based on the occultic idea of sympathetic magic. Well, that's a lot of hocus pocus, but anybody who believes, like some of the extreme manifest sons of God and some of the other folks that are more more comfortable in the esoteric world, sympathetic magic has two or three components to it. One, it attempts to magically manipulate the material world through the so-called law of correspondence of internet connectivity. Okay, well, who teaches or even believes that kind of stuff? One is Wicca, witchcraft. Two is voodoo, yeah? So the idea of influencing the spiritual realm through some kind of correspondence in the natural realm comes down to the really goofy idea of poking a little doll with a needle to hurt somebody else or kill them, you know, burning the doll. And there's some kind of connection with the thing that you wanted to manipulate in the natural world. Okay, so that's a big one. What else is sympathetic magic? Well, sympathetic magic is one thing. The as above, so also below. It is also a foundational teaching for Alice Bailey's ideas about the spiritual hierarchy, i.e., the great chain of being, i.e., the great cloud of witnesses. They are above, and they supposedly guide humanity below on their way back to divine status.
You know, whenever I began mentioning that the religion we came from was very similar to witchcraft, I get so much outcry, especially from the people in it. You know, they don't want to be compared to witches for whatever reason. And yet, it's ironic because they're actually doing many of the same things, many of the same practices. And where, you know, I left that and I went to a Christian church and we began learning core Christian values. You love the sinner. You want the sinner to be saved. You don't despise the sinner. And you don't despise those who despitefully use you, etc. Well, in these movements, it's not that way. It's welcome open arms whenever they want you to come into the fold. But if you ever try to leave or if you ever try to question, that's whenever you see the wrath of the witch or whatever is the demon that they're serving and giving it the name Jesus. Because they will just pounce on you with the wrath of vengeance and they want to place curses on your head. And they will use biblical phrases to place those curses, which again tells you it's not the Christian God that they're serving.
Yeah, John, that judgmental aspect, certainly there. One of the folks that we've talked about earlier, and I'll just throw his name out there again, Bill Hammond, very much like J. Preston Eby and others, like Kelly Varner, said that for you to be in this judgment ministry, you have to come to perfect love first. And just, oh my goodness, how hypocritical, how bizarre is that? So, but just to wrap up for what I've been bringing today, comes back to that idea of ongoing revelations, because Branham and all the other ones can come at this. So three people, Jane Lead, Bill Britton, and actually the esotericist and Luciferian, and I can tell you why I say that. It's not idle talk. Alice Bailey. They all have something to say about ongoing revelation. So here's Jane Lead. She says that new and fresh revelations, new springs of revelation will be given to the elite. Britton says, God has always been faithful to provide us with new and exciting revelations. I didn't know that's true. Lead says, revelation is not to be rested upon as if there's nothing more to be revealed. Britton said that the elect will be introduced to deeper truth since the Holy Spirit has not stopped opening up the scriptures. Dinar, you will hear stuff like that. I'm not even going to list the guys, but there's a lot of that kind of talk. So Alice Bailey said, new truths will come through the doctrine of the continuity of Revelation. So who's who? Sounds like they're all in the same camp. They're all in the same sinking boat together. So I wanted to follow up on this kind of stuff with, again, with Becky Britton, Bill Britton's daughter. So on August 22nd, 2020, I made a call, and she kind of forwarded it on this time to one of Bill Britton's associates, Lynn Hiles. And he told me this, which I found, I was about to laugh at the moment. I tried to suppress the laugh, but he said that Bill Britton worked at such a high spiritual level that sometimes Britton didn't even understand his own teachings. Yes, okay, well, a lot of us that would prefer to have good teachings don't understand his teachings, so I guess we're in agreement.
You know, it's also funny because I'm working with many different groups of people now, not just the former members of the Message cult following of William Branham, but when I began to understand that the term, the Message, was this broad, encompassing statement that included many different cults and sects and subsects, I began to realize that it's all the same framework, even though the theology has, as we mentioned, shifted over time, and they have new core values that they consider to be the required for your faith, and everybody who doesn't believe these core values is apostate. It's still the same framework, right? And where it got really funny is examining just that term that you mentioned, revelation, because group A, whoever their prophet, leader, apostle, whatever it is that they call their central figure, when he utters his quote-unquote revelation, they're so duped by that spell that it's really hard for them to recognize that in many cases, it's the guy who's putting it on. You know, you can clearly tell if you were never under that control, you can clearly tell that this guy is using fakery. But yet people in other groups, those same people will watch the other group central figure and they'll say, well, that's all show. Can't you tell this guy's fake? He looks fake. He sounds fake. But they can't, while they're under the same control, they can't see it. And that's where it, for me, it's fascinating because I'm fascinated by psychology anyway, and it is a psychological control that they have over the people. And until they begin to break free, they can't see it. And then when they do the wake up, they're like, what on earth was I in? How were they able to do this to my head? And it's just so fascinating. And we're only skimming the surface. I know we're drawing near an hour, so we'll probably wrap this up here, Steve, and then continue on with this discussion on the next podcast episode. But I just want to say this topic, I could talk on it for hours and hours and hours, because it's so fascinating to me to watch how the anti-biblical themes were branded as Christianity in these movements, and these men could do that and convince people that it was Christianity while those same people are holding Bibles in their hand. How is that possible, man? it's just unbelievable. But anyway, we'll pick up next week. And if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more information about the dark side of Latter Rain, read Weaponized Religion, From Latter Rain to Colonia Dignidad, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible. And for more information about the Converging Apostasy, you can read the book, The Converging Apostasy. You can also read the book, A Quick Outline of Hands-on Eschatology, A Matter of Timing and Agency, also available on Amazon.